Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our weekly Hoops HD report. I am your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up here by David Griggs and Joby Fortson, below me by John Titel and John Stalica. This is a podcast where we go over anything and everything going on in the college basketball world, at least among the all the major teams that anybody cares about, other than a few of us here. But
I care about all the other teams, too.
Well, yeah, some of us care about all 353. A lot of people don't care about much out of the power conferences, but we are going to talk about all the power conferences. We got a lot to get to. We're going to talk a little bit about the NCAA's bracket preview reveal over the weekend, which about an hour after that was revealed, it became moot as games went final. But let's go ahead and pull the screen here, because I want to start with the same thing we've been starting with the last few weeks, and that's a little bit of a blind resume, where I pull up two teams' resumes. Not necessarily asking you guys to guess what teams these are. We'll reveal them in a minute, but I just, you know, want to take the
We're always able to guess which teams they are.
I want to take a comparison here. Team on the left, team on the right here. And, you know, you're looking at, I guess the question here is, which profile is better, or are they about equal? And Titel, you're our bracketology expert. Just take a look at these profiles. Does either one of them stand out to you, or are they, you know, a coin flip?
I'm bad at this game. They appear to be a coin flip right now. Let me just point out a couple of things that catch my eye. Number one, the team on the left is a bit of a home court hero, as they are 2-4 on the road, whereas the team on the right is 6-2. The other thing that catches my eye is the remaining schedule. A lot of double-digit net rankings on the left and a lot of triple-digit rankings on the right.
Yeah, a lot more chances on the team on the left, though. But you look at things like non-conference strength of schedule, which the committee kind of pointed out with Penn State over the weekend, a lot better on the right.
I know who the team on the right is now.
Yeah, I know the team on the right is, but I don't know.
I still don't have it.
Dave, you don't have it. But Dave, would you agree with me? These profiles look kind of similar, at least?
Yeah, kind of similar on the surface.
Well, let me go here. Let me reveal that. But we've got a team here on the left, actually, that most experts, including Mr. Titel, have been putting in their field and still in their field as of this week. The team on the right, team that I don't think anybody's been discussing at all this season.
Except for the J&G.
Except maybe for the J&G. We have the Stanford Cardinal and the Richmond Spiders out of the Atlantic 10.
Yeah. I agree. The team on the right looks better.
I don't know that this is necessarily stating that Richmond is that good. Maybe it's a statement that Stanford is that bad. But, Joby, your thoughts on that, that these two profiles are that
close? I'm in agreement. I think they're about at the same spot. Richmond, and when we get to the A-10, I'll talk more about it, but Richmond's in that group of Rhode Island, Richmond, VCU. At least one and maybe two could pop out for bids from that group, depending on how they do against the rest of the conference. They're right on the cut line. Stanford has been – they've been listless lately. Right now I do have them out.
Honestly.
Behind a Richmond. But yeah,
Silica, I got to call you out. You put a bracket up on the website this morning. You had Stanford in as your last team, which I didn't have a big issue with.
Yeah.
But you didn't even have Richmond under consideration, and I need you to defend that.
Well, honestly, I could defend that Stanford should be the last team in. I've probably been waiting for the other shoe to drop as far as Richmond goes, but when you take a closer look at the profile, there are some similarities to St. Mary's, where they beat Wisconsin on a neutral floor early in the year. They also lose to a team out of the Big South. So, honestly, I can't defend omitting the Spiders as far as a team that should be considered, but I don't think they're going to be quite there yet, even though they've already blown their chance to beat Dayton, but they will at least get one more chance against VCU.
Right. And I think one of the things that you overlook when you look at Richard is that Rhode Island win, but that's a road win at a Rhode Island team that everybody, Titel, you included, is now putting in the field, correct?
You got to see them in person. They are in the field and getting better every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They really are. Well, we'll talk about them when we get to the A-10, but this Rhode Island team is on fire.
I'm going to go now here. We mentioned already that the committee did do the bracket reveal. I'm going to put their teams up here on the screen. And I want to go, Joby, let me start with you for a little bit of comments on what they did. Was there anything here that really surprised you outright, other than Penn State not being here, which has been, I think, discussed to death already?
Right. I was surprised Kentucky didn't make it over Butler even before this weekend. It is what it is. It's not like it wasn't an outrageous thing. If you're ranking, I guarantee you Kentucky's on the 5 line. you know, for instance, in there if they went to a five line. So, but and as we saw from Michigan State, Butler, Oregon, the Force didn't do this well this weekend.
Yeah. It's kind of a curse to be on this board, right?
Yeah, we'll see from then on.
You got a team on there that's not even in the top 25 today in right. Michigan State.
But they have the year Cassius Winston, so.
Yeah, and arguably – one of the things I this has probably happened – on very rare occasion before. I think we've seen it out of Gonzaga, but like when you see Dayton on the two line and when you look at their resume topping out with a neutral floor win over St. Mary's and you know, a road win at St. Louis, Dayton's profile is good, but it typically isn't as good as what you normally see a two seed get. So that tells me the committee is not looking at what's just on the surface. They're looking at probably the predictive matrices. They're looking at the margin of victory and the way Dayton has won and how they've played. So it isn't this superficial exercise that I think it felt like they were doing several years ago with how many top 50, how many top 100. I mean, they look at overall road wins. They look at margin of victory. They look at while they lost games, like how did they lose? So I think it's – I get the sense that it's a complete examination when I see – particularly Dayton on the two, but you know, maybe some other teams that are seated a little bit better than where they top out.
I think overall record's getting a lot of attention too. It, with the uniqueness at the top of the field, I think overall record's getting a lot of attention.
Well, let me just quickly, Ty Tell, you're a bracketology expert. You have any other thoughts that haven't already been mentioned on what the committee did?
A couple of quickies. Number one, I agree with it. This was the four seeds I had for my bracket on Sunday. Obviously, I think Michigan State will be dropping out of the top four very soon. Secondly, I can't think of a worse penalty for San Diego State. They go undefeated, and the reward is they get to travel 3,000 miles east and maybe play Duke in New York City. I mean, I can't pick them. If they're 40-0, I can't pick them in good conscience to win that game.
Well, at least that would be an Elite Eight game. Contrast that to a team like Wichita State, who went undefeated back in, I think it was 2014, and their reward was Kentucky in the second round.
Yeah, true. Well, we don't see San Diego State. We play the second round yet, but although Butler, I think, is something team they would match up well with in the what we see on there. Yeah. Let's move over to some standings, and let's start in the ACC, which saw – I think we got to start with Duke, who had a hell of a last 3 days here. First with an unbelievable come from behind win at Carolina.
Twice
in both in with buzzer beaters basically in regulation and in overtime. And then on top of that, the you know, after that such an emotional win to be able to come home and beat a very good Florida State tonight.
Oh, I had it DVR. Thanks for the spoiler, Chad.
Well, let me go to Stalika then instead, because David, you're yelling and screaming.
Well, you look at a team like Florida State, who was also coming off of an emotional win themselves against Miami. Duke kind of had the Noles at arm's length for, I would say, about the first 20 to 25 minutes of the game. Florida State finally pulls ahead with about 6 minutes to go, but Duke retakes the lead, and Florida State unable to get any closer than three in the final minute here.
Yeah, but yeah, good game for Duke though, getting these two wins, and they really have they're done with Florida State and Louisville at this point until the ACC tournament. So I think they've got a real good chance to win this conference or come, you know, worst case scenario, a tie for first in the conference. But Tytel, what about the team that is in first place there, the Louisville Cardinals?
It's really been a roller coaster of a season, despite the fact that they've only lost three games. Started 9-0, looked amazing. Then they lost 3 of 5, although granted, the three losses were to top 30 Ken Pom teams, Texas Tech, Kentucky, Florida State. They bounced back to win 10 in a row. They beat Duke last month. They beat Virginia last Saturday, despite losing in the final 4 minutes. Chris Mack, he only won 20 games last year. He's already got 21 this year. One of the best three-point shooting teams in the nation, number two actually behind BYU. They have 7 winnable games left in the regular season if they can win their final 2 road games, which are very tough, at Florida State and then a trip to Charlottesville. I think a number one seed is in play. Jordan Awara, he only had 6 against Duke last month. He's been on fire. Past 4 wins, 24 points a game, 8 boards, 16 of 34 from behind the arc.
Wow. Joby, the thing is that we've been talking to the ACC even more now than ever, I think. These top three teams, such good teams. And beyond that, it's, you know, a bubble, and who else gets in? Your who's, I think, still think leading the way there among that rest of that pack, despite the loss to Louisville.
Yeah, the Louisville loss won't hurt. It's a missed opportunity, especially since Virginia was up with about a minute to go. Internally, there was, what is a Walden 10 side? Well, we found out this weekend that we actually had somebody make a three. If that wasn't a one-off, I don't think so. Despite his overall percentage for the year, Tytel's really good at this. I bet you pull his percentage over the last 10 games, it will look really nice, probably 50%. If he becomes a regular contributor from outside, they already have decent inside with Diakite being able to score. They actually have the ability to not do what they did against Louisville, which is score 70 every game, but they have the ability to take care of business when they have to, and they have a shot at winning one of those games that they probably do need to fully feel safe, which is Duke at home and Louisville at home. If they can win one of those two and then take care of business, they can afford maybe a loss to Carolina or Blacksburg. But otherwise, they better take care of every game they're supposed to, and not, you know, if they can't win either of those Duke or Louisville.
Well, I want to talk about, David, about Virginia's actually next game coming up, because a team that has very quietly started to catch my attention, not enough that they're in the field yet, but they pick up this win at Virginia, or maybe the next game at Duke. What about the Fighting Irish, who've won four straight?
Well, they have won four straight. Now, I think two of those, or maybe three of those, were at home against teams with overall losing records.
Yeah, so, but they won at Clemson on Sunday night also.
Yeah, but they did win at Clemson. And something else they did, Chad, before that four
Sims
game.
Sims was out, though. Yeah. Remember that. Sims was out. That's a big loss for Clemson.
Okay, Sims was out, but the four wins in a row, but the game that they lost before they went on that win streak, I want to say, was it Florida State by one?
Yes.
So, if anything, it isn't the four games that they've won. It's the fact that they almost beat Florida State and then they won the next four, if that makes any sense. That has me sitting up and taking a little bit of notice. Now, I think that they have tons of work left to do. Like, and by that I mean they've got to win probably one of the next two, and then maybe only lose one more after that.
I think they need the Florida State home win, honestly, on top of that.
So. It wasn't just the game at Florida State. They also had the loss in the closing seconds at home against Syracuse just 3 days before that.
And a two-point loss to Indiana and a three-point loss at home to Louisville. They've had a one-point loss to Boston College. A lot of close losses.
Oh, that's like losing by 20 to a normal team. But, I'm sitting up and taking notice. But, like, are they playing – they don't have an NCAA tournament caliber resume, but are they playing like an NCAA tournament caliber team? And the answer is maybe. I don't know. they certainly did at Florida State. Like, had they won that game against Florida State, which they almost did and arguably should have, like, look at how much that one game changes the complexion of that profile. And then we're sitting here talking about how they've won five in a row and how they're on the bubble or maybe even inside of it.
There's the upcoming schedule in the ACC coming up. We mentioned the Notre Dame games at Virginia and at Duke. Keep an eye on Saturday. Also, Syracuse at Florida State. Syracuse, they come up with a road win there. They are right back in the thick of things, although people still have them right on the cusp of being in or out at the moment.
And before Chad moves on, I noticed there is something a little bit different in the standings this week. Georgia Tech not highlighted in red.
Thank you. Georgia Tech, as we've mentioned before, they've been highlighted in red because they have the NCAA postseason ban. They've appealed that. There has not been a decision on that. Make this clear. But the word that I'm hearing now, and this could still change before the end of the season, word I'm hearing now is that we will not have a decision before the NCAA tournament this year. As a result, Georgia Tech, because of the appeal, is technically going to be postseason eligible this year, might be out next year when they lose the appeal. Quite frankly, given what their record is now, if I was Georgia Tech, I would withdraw that portion of the appeal at least and take the 1 year ban so you don't have to suffer it next year when you might be in contention for a bid, but who knows.
Have they been adjusted on the survival board?
Yes, they have.
Okay, good deal.
Let's go over to the Big Ten here, and maybe if the standings come up here, where's start with – well, there why don't we start with last night, the game of the season, as Northwestern once again blew a 300-point lead and lost to Rutgers. And what would have been a devastating loss for the Scarlet Knights. But Rutgers actually, in all seriousness, is still hanging in there. But in terms of the rest of the standings here, you've got I don't even know where we find Michigan State down in sixth place suddenly. Taita, let me start with you on this Michigan State team with suffering that loss to Michigan over the weekend.
Yeah, the Maize and Blue just might be turning things around. I had kind of given up on them. They lost 8 of 12 games after a 7-0 start that included a win over Gonzaga by 18 in the Bahamas. But if you look closer, all of the 8 losses were to top 35 KenPom teams, so nothing too bad on their resume. They've won 3 of 4. They beat Rutgers at the Garden. They beat Michigan State in Ann Arbor. And the key has been the return of Isaiah Livers from injury. He's a huge factor. Without him, 4-5. With him, 10-4. He's a difference maker. They should win at Northwestern on Wednesday because, as we've seen, anybody can beat Northwestern.
Final four. Only if you're down. Only if Northwestern's up 20.
Final four road games are brutal. At Rutgers, at Purdue, at Ohio State, and Maryland. Those 4 teams at home this year are combined 50-4.
Yeah, Rutgers. The Rutgers game here, I mean, they played Rutgers last week at Madison Square Garden. They're going to be at Rutgers in New Brunswick coming up. But Rutgers outplayed them that entire game. Rutgers really should have won that game, too. But, Joby, when you look at the rest of these standings here, I know I kind of brushed past and went to the bracket reveal section, but Penn State sitting there tied for second place off a real good week with that win at the win at Michigan State and the home win over a feisty Minnesota team.
Yeah, and that Penn State, you know, they're finally going to get that tournament bid they've come so close to in their own minds. Yeah, we've been on them because they've had a bad out-of-conference schedule a lot, and they do, once again, as the committee pointed out this weekend. But their performance in what is the deepest, toughest – I mean, Big East can argue, but toughest conference in the country – They have earned this to the fullest. They will get their bid. They will be wearing white. And if they continue on their present trajectory, which is very reasonable, look at that schedule. That's not just – I mean, there's a couple of losses there. I mean, at Iowa is going to be really tough, and Purdue is playing much better. But they take care of business at home and pull off a couple of road wins. I think that 4 seed is a very real possibility because they will be sitting – you know, with a commanding record, a commanding net, and net tier 1 wins galore at that point.
Yeah, I thought they were kind of snubbed a little bit. I really like how this Penn State team is playing. They won at Michigan State. They won at Michigan, something Michigan State failed to do, albeit after the bracket was announced. But they're really rolling. And when you look at their losses, they kind of – the one at Ole Miss or not, I'm not at Ole Miss, but like against Ole Miss is a little bit of a head-scratcher. But outside of that, you know, Ohio State really good at home. Rutgers undefeated at home. Many not very good but good at home. Like those are all really, really hard games to win. And with the exception of Ohio State, they were right in pretty much all of them. This is a very good Penn State team, and I noticed this other team. It's their opponent tomorrow that you brought up here on the right.
Yeah, I want to actually ask Stalika about them. I mean, I think this is the best 10-loss team by far in the nation. When you've got this Purdue team that had an amazing week this week, not only crushing Iowa but then pick up a nice road win in Indiana.
Yeah, I had also pointed out that a couple blowout wins that the Boilers have at home, not just the recent one against Iowa, but also Michigan State, where I think the Spartans began their most recent slide right here. And let's not forget, they also put a 29-point defeat against our Virginia way back in December when the Boilers were just starting their Jekyll and Hyde ways after losing to Texas at home. But
it was not that close.
But I think the stat of the day that I had seen on Twitter, Purdue has more wins at Assembly Hall in the past 4 years than they do losses at home at Mackey Arena.
Yeah. Wow. You know, winning its Assembly Hall on Saturday, good job for the Boilers. If you watch that game on television, you may not have noticed that Purdue won because no one was talking about that. You would have never known that Purdue was even playing.
Right. All the talk was Bobby Knight's return to Indiana. An Indiana team that, David, that is suddenly squarely on the bubble, I think, with that loss.
Yeah, very much. You know, really poor on the road. There's a smattering of teams, Indiana, Rutgers, Michigan. Michigan's won some neutral floor games that I think gets them over the top. But these teams need more than one road win. And if they don't get it, like if they don't this is not easy. Michigan, Mini, Purdue, Illinois. If they lose all four of those, I don't think they're in. I really don't.
Right. Let me also add one more little tidbit about Purdue here. Not only have they sold out their student tickets for this year, they just sold out their student tickets for next season after what they did on Saturday.
Why is Bobby Knight coming to Purdue?
let's take a look at the upcoming schedule real quick here in the Big Ten. We already mentioned a few of these games, including Penn State, Purdue, Rutgers, huge road test at Ohio State. Once again, you pick up that road win like we spoke about last week with their game at Maryland. That makes that puts them as close to being locked at this point of the season as you can, which is amazing to say about Rutgers.
Yeah.
Well, Ohio State has been kind of the health spa of the Big Ten this year, so if Rutgers can't do it in Columbus, I'm not sure where that road W is coming from.
I would have said that Maryland at Michigan State Saturday is a great game, but I don't know the way Michigan State's playing right now, if it really is or not at this point. But let's keep things rolling here, and let's jump over to the Big 12, where Tytel, as we record this, we are watching, at least I'm watching, a good game between Baylor and Texas Tech doing absolutely unholy things to TCU, up 40-13 as we record this, about 9:40 p.m. on Monday evening, Eastern time.
Yeah, they've been doing unholy things to different teams throughout the season. They had a brutal schedule, an 8-game stretch with losses to Baylor, Kentucky, and Kansas, and a split with the Mountaineers. They bounced back with wins against Oklahoma and at Texas, so they're 15-8. Finish off this month, 6 winnable games. I would argue they have the most difficult March schedule of anybody in the country. Get this. They finish the regular season in March at Baylor and then host Kansas. Then they might have to beat both of those teams in the Big 12 tourney just to make the NCAA tournament. Well, probably okay, but can you imagine playing those 4 teams in like a 2-week span? Jamias Ramsey, the freshman, has turned his entire season around from 3-point range. He had a 5-game stretch in January, 3 of 21. The past 4 games, 14 of 22.
I think Texas Tech is a little safer than that. I don't know if they need to win all those games to get in. I mean, they're 24th in the rankings. I know that the rankings aren't on the team sheet, but the NABC ranking in committee is, if they're 24th in the coaches poll, presumably the advisory board likes them too. And like, there isn't, while there's a lot of, you know, losses, none of them, and maybe just the total number of them add up to being bad. None of them are really that bad.
Honestly, I think the only way Texas Tech could be in real trouble here is after tonight, if they were to actually lose 2 out of their next 3, which would include a home loss against that K-State.
Right, home loss to K-State. But the Oklahoma State, you should win at Oklahoma State. You should win at Iowa State. Now, especially that Halliburton's out for the season for Iowa State. I don't know what the Cyclones have left. Then it gets a little more interesting, those last 4, especially because you got the trip to Oklahoma. Yeah. Especially, Joby, I got West Virginia on the right here, coming off the loss to Oklahoma after making the
ugly, ugly game against Oklahoma this weekend. Yeah. Really took it I wasn't sold on them as a 2 seed even before this. I know they've racked up some stuff. It just quite isn't there. The St. John's and Kansas State losses bother me. They flat out bother me. But this is a tournament team. This is a team wearing white. They're going to be fine. They're about to get run hard into – I mean, I will say – 2 Baylors schedule. And 1 Kansas is a tough nut.
And 1 more Oklahoma still. We really don't know that much about this team other than the fact that they split with Texas Tech. That's all we know so far, I think. and that they lost at Kansas. They
lost on the road to Oklahoma.
So West Virginia's going to be interesting over the course of between now and the Big 12 tournament.
I don't see that. If they do what we expect, which I expect them to lose twice to Baylor, lose to Kansas, but beat the Oklahoma States even on the road, et cetera, if they do that, they're still going to be where they are today, which is about 4, 5-ish, 4, et cetera.
Well,
maybe a 3.
The committee gave him a 2. What the?
Which, that surprised me.
It was before the Oklahoma loss, but I do agree with that. That's surprising. One of the metrics that did have them ranked very high, had them in the top 3 most of the season, actually, was the KPI, which Joe Beth, I know you're familiar with the KPI metric a little bit more than most people are, but that's actually, you know, I've seen the committee seems to favor that one a lot, though, too.
Where Kevin misses, he has a few blind spots in the formula, specifically a Gonzaga. Check when we get to Gonzaga, you'll see Gonzaga's like 12th or something in the KPI. Yeah. But as far as the major conference teams, it is a pretty good system. I'd like to think I'm relatively close to it in many cases. It's a strong resume-based system. It won the title of best computer ranking 2 years ago. I won last year, just as a note. but it is a reasonable guide to look at. But once again, before this weekend, what was West Virginia's record? 18-4. That is a gaudy record. I think the committee is getting enamored with gaudy records this year. Just, you know, if they read it today, I think Auburn might be replacing West Virginia's a 2.
Well, let's keep things rolling here. We've got the upcoming schedule there. The key games, as we already mentioned, are West Virginia's games this week, hosting Kansas Wednesday night. At Baylor Saturday, the real gauntlet here for West Virginia this week.
If they win both of those, then put them on.
They're in good shape if they win both of those, I think. Let's keep things rolling though, and let's jump over to the SEC, where we've got a 3-way tie now at the top of the standing with Auburn, Kentucky, and LSU. Tytel, let me start with you. You want just one or more of those teams?
I'm going to talk about the Tigers, who I really thought that they were looking like a basketball school.
LSU Tigers, right?
Yes, and now they had a 10-game winning streak. They were looking great, and it turns out they are a football school after all. I don't know which loss is more painful, 9 points at Vanderbilt on Wednesday, despite scoring 90 on the road, or a 1-point overtime buzzer beater losing to Auburn on Saturday, despite scoring 90 points on the road. They should beat Missouri Tuesday. Then they have a tough 4-game stretch, 3 on the road and host Kentucky. Good news, very reliable starting lineup. All 5 guys have each started 21-plus games, so not a lot of juggling for Coach Wade. 3 sophomores and 1 freshman, though, very young. The freshman, Trendon Watford, he's starting to play like the McDonald's All-American he is. Last 4 games, 17 points, 9 boards a game.
And let's talk about the other Tigers also. Stalica, Auburn, the key is just kind of, you know, be anti-Northwestern. You'll fall down big and come back.
Well, this is a team that just had one bad week thanks to losses at Alabama and Florida. But here they make a comeback to win at Arkansas last Tuesday. And then there was the aforementioned comeback against the other Bengal Tigers on Saturday right here. But they have enough quality wins now that's starting to justify some of their advanced metrics right here. But I would say their ceiling's probably a 2, but looking more like a 3 or 4 right here. And with wins against Kentucky and LSU now in hand, everyone's going to be chasing Auburn until otherwise noted.
Yeah. To build on something Chad said, they were down 18 to Ole Miss and came back and won. How big were they down? Was it 20 in both games?
I believe close to that, yeah.
In LSU, yes. I saw that.
So one of the big mistakes when you are playing Auburn is to get up by 20. You're just screwed if you do that.
Dave, well, I want to stick with you here. I've got Auburn's profiles coming up here on the left. But on the right-hand side, I'm bringing up the Arkansas Razorbacks, who are pathetically down in the conference standings in a conference that's not going to get a ton of bids like the Big Ten by any means. But yet this team still has the metrics. Is this just garbage now, especially with the loss to Missouri this weekend?
Well, losing to Missouri really, really hurt. But, the adjusted, the first component of at least the NET is, the wins at Alabama and at Indiana. It takes into account not just who you play, but where you play. Both those teams really good at home, or at least respectable at home. And I think that might have something to do with why they're high in the net. But, when you look at their losses, South Carolina – not a tournament team. Missouri, not a tournament team. Western Kentucky, while they played them before, like they before the Toppers lost a key player, for those of you that don't follow under the radar, still the kind of game that you're expected to win if you are a tournament team. So they've lost it's not just that they're losing, it's that they're losing games that you would expect tournament teams to win almost routinely.
Yeah, they are. And when it comes down to it, then, Tytel, let me ask you this. After those top three teams, is there anybody else that you're really looking at in this conference? If not Arkansas, who's down there in 10th place?
No, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of protected seeds out there. I think Mississippi State and Florida are in the hunt. And okay, the fact is that, like, they're both having mediocre seasons, but they're both two games out of first place, and they literally have their destiny in their hands. So I'm not saying they're going to win it, but the fact that they're in it in mid-February is impressive to me.
Right, and those are two teams we've got to really take a look at here. Coming up this week, Mississippi State has two road trips at Ole Miss and at Arkansas, while Florida is at A&M and hosting Vanderbilt. So both those teams really need to 2-0 weeks this week.
Yeah. Another team I wanted to mention just real quick, Chad, Georgia. They went into Memphis and won, and I remember saying that I thought that they were a good team and that it was a big win when Kentucky won at Georgia. I no longer feel that Georgia is a good team.
When you look at the rest of the schedule here, the only other game I even circle worth watching is maybe Alabama-Auburn, just because of the rivalry factor. That would not really, we're not really having any great games on the schedule this week in the SEC. But let's jump over to let's go to the Big East. We haven't touched on that yet.
Big East.
Here's the Big East with Seton Hall just continuing to look really, really good. One of the best road teams in the country, actually. We're talking about teams that can't win road games.
Two great wins this week.
Other than the fact they can't win at Rutgers, Seton Hall has been great on the road. Joby, you want to discuss them?
Yes. I have been on the Seton Hall train now for several weeks. I really like this team. It's the inside-out game. It's an eye test, and now the resume is really starting to come in with the wins against Georgetown, which is, as Tytel knows watching, how this team is almost a tournament team. They are, and that's a great win at Georgetown. But then Saturday, the coup de grace, that you cannot get a better road win. Seton Hall, at least, cannot get a better road win than at Villanova. The only other better road win is beating Seton Hall at Seton Hall.
Yeah, and Tytel, how about that team that they beat had a bad, bad week for Nova?
I can't explain it. Like, they're a great team. They're just snake bit. I mean, they only lost three games in the first 3 months of the season. They're now 0-3 in February, two home losses, and the buzzer-beating heartbreaker at Butler. 78% from the line, free throw line, number 9 in the nation. But it's not really a factor when five of your six losses are by six or more points. It's not like they're losing every game at the buzzer, thank God. McDonald's All-American Jeremiah Robinson Earl. Good news, he's a great rebounder. Bad news, might have hit the wall on offense. Single-digit scoring in each of the past three games. Terrible shooting, 6 of 28 combined. The amazing parts for Stalica, when they go to Xavier on February 22nd, KenPom predicts they're going to lose to Xavier.
Salika, let me ask you about the Xavier then. Hey, how about them?
That? I mean, if you're looking forward to that matchup, honestly, it would not surprise me because, strange as it sounds, they're better equipped to beat Nova under Travis Steele than they ever were under Chris Mack. But if you're looking at Xavier right now, they're quietly on a three-game winning streak and could suddenly bring Butler down to 500 in conference play if they're able to steal a game in Hankel come Wednesday nights.
Yeah, Butler
quietly on a what was quiet about blowing out Seton Hall at Seton Hall? I think they're on a very noisy
thank you, David. David, how about Butler is coming off a loss over the weekend to Marquette after they beat Villanova, and Marquette really playing well right now also, though.
Yeah, real well right now. And I mean, they just boat raced Butler over the weekend. I mean, they led, basically tipped the buzzer, and it was never close. And you look at that, you know, the home wins against Villanova. They do have the win at Xavier, who's coming up. A win at Georgetown. While Georgetown probably does miss the tournament, they're still tough to beat at home. And that USC win, like, I know we'll get to SC a little bit later. They're going to get quite a bit of credit for that, I think. And when you look at their losses, and you make a list of all their bad losses, you have nothing on the list.
Let me go back to Seton Hall for a moment here. You've already mentioned that they've won at Villanova and at Butler. They still have trips to Creighton and Marquette coming up, and those are teams that have only lost one game at home each. So if Seton Hall were to somehow win both of those, are we then possibly talking about number one seed contender?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. This week, Seton Hall is hosting Creighton, and they got a trip to Providence, who has been dangerous, but just lost, I think, too many games early in the season.
Right.
I will say, anytime we talk about number one seed, though, it does require those four that the committee placed there to slip up. No one's going to pass them by sheer will, including a Seton Hall, including a Louisville. Very reasonable statements earlier said, but without San Diego State taking that loss, without Gonzaga taking another loss, without those Big 12 teams losing to teams other than themselves, I don't see it. I don't see them catching them. And I'd bet on those four run the table for the extent that they can.
Well, we've got an interesting night here coming up Wednesday night this week.
Man.
There are six teams we're talking about for tournament bids right now. They're playing each other. Creighton at Seton Hall, Marquette at Villanova, Xavier at Butler. So if you're a Big East fan, this Wednesday night's going to be great. Sunday, just quick note, Villanova with a non-conference Big 5 game against Temple. I think this is the last significant non-conference game left this season before the NCAA tournament. So.
Yeah.
But, of course, I don't really expect Temple to do much there. But on that note, we're just talking about Marquette, where Marcus Howard is having an amazing season. But let's talk about the best player in the entire nation, who happens to play at Dayton, Joby, over in the Atlantic 10 here. We talked a little bit of A-10 at the start, but Obi Toppin, amazing season now at this point. Player of the year?
Oh,
I'm hearing talk.
I just think that the bottom of the A-10 is just so awful.
What's that have to do with him?
It doesn't. Yeah, it does. Because you know, Marcus Howard is playing every game that Marcus Howard walks out on. He is playing what is it? DePaul 1-9. I think DePaul's a pretty darn good team. I mean, That's the fact. They're at least NIT level, and they're dead last in their conference. You get to take rest here. But, yes, amazing season. I don't want to push too far off. If you look at the stats, looking at what he's doing to a Dayton program that is, you know, lifting up, and their two slip-ups, if you want to say they are slip-ups, are everybody in the nation probably would get those losses, man. I certainly it's worthy of discussion, but you know I'm showing my major Power Five bias, I guess.
Okay, I like this Dayton team a lot. I kind of talked about them in when we had the bracket reveal. That loss to Colorado, it's kind of aggravating because they seem to control most of that game and just kind of let it get away from them. But the resume, it I've been saying all along, I think it's a case where a team is a lot better than their resume, at least where it tops out. Now, a really, really big game tomorrow. Go ahead and put Rody up on the other side there,
Chad. Right. Actually, I wanted to ask Titel about Rody here, so let me go over to him. Okay. As we go to Dayton's next opponent, and a team that, as we mentioned already at the top of the show, is really playing well, but look at this, with only the five losses, 18-5 now, and 10-1 in conference.
10 in a row.
To quickly respond to David's point, I think it does matter who you beat up on, because Chris Clemens had 30 points a game last year for Campbell. Just because you're scoring 30 points a game against the Big South does not mean you're one of the best players in the nation. But moving on to Rhode Island, unbelievable. I got to see them in person. They were 8-5 a month ago after a home loss to Richmond. They've turned things around, 10 wins in a row. They swept VCU, which nobody does, even up with Dayton in the conference win column. I saw them in person on Saturday. They won by 31. It was not even that close. 17 turnovers, problem. 11 steals, solution. Junior point guard, Fats Russell, amazing. 6 of 10 from behind the arc. This kid, he shot 22% from the three-point line last year. He's made an amazing improvement this year. And we have the A-10 sibling game of the year on Tuesday. As freshman Jacob Toppin brings the Rams west to face OB at Dayton. They switch everything on defense, so that's why they're second in the nation. They only allow 28% from behind the three-point line.
And these two teams will play twice till they play again on March 4th. And one of the things that the committee stressed, look at that non-conference strength of schedule for Rhode Island, 12th in the nation.
Yeah, and Dayton, not bad either at 24.
Yeah. That Brown game was really tough.
Oh, yeah, the Ocean State Championship.
Well you got to remember, it was the Ocean State Championship right there, and they did fall to Brown.
One more point about Rhode Island, and if you read the daily write-ups, you'll see this tomorrow. They're playing, while it took them a longer time to get going, Dayton was pretty much steamrolling right out of the gate. For the last 10 games, they've been playing at about the same caliber of Dayton. I think Dayton's margin of victory is like 14 points, and Rhode Island is 12.5, so – against, you know, like or similar opponents, or the same opponents, really, they've both looked pretty similar. While Dayton has the home court advantage, if anyone in this league is going to beat them, it's going to be Rhodey. Right. And I think you
And again, we got the big game coming up tomorrow night, Rhode Island, Dayton. The other game I want to circle this week, Saturday, the big rivalry game, actually, there, VCU and Richmond, and two teams, as we discussed in the top issue,
huge game.
Right there in bubble talk. So the winner of that
very bubblicious rivalry
moving forward. Stalika, let's jump over to the Pac-12, which we did not discuss yet. And specifically, a good week for Arizona State, even though it was a pair of home games. And there was enough for you to think they were a tournament team, correct?
Well, it would be easy to say just after 1 week alone. But keep in mind, Arizona State, they also have wins against USC. They also have a win against St. John's. If you go back to December, and they also split with Arizona, so it does give them a bit of a start right here.
And if you said that was a team that had a good week, Colorado also had a good week with, you know, the win, home wins over Cal and Stanford. A team that did not have a good week, only played one game though. Oregon losing at Oregon State.
Not a good week at all. This is another team I thought was a basketball school just a week ago when they were 18-4. It turns out, much like LSU, they are a football school instead. The resume is great. They beat Houston, Seton Hall, Michigan, and my Wildcats. And a one-point overtime loss to Gonzaga looks fantastic. I thought they were a top-three seed. 0-2 this month, thanks to a pair of double-digit losses. Stanford, explainable. Oregon State, I know it's a rivalry game, but you can't do that. One of the best three-point shooting teams in the nation, 38%. They look like a home-court hero. All six of their losses are away from home. They're really missing their freshman center in Folly Dante. He missed the first 10 games with eligibility issues, came back and was helpful, and he twisted his knee at Washington 3 weeks ago, and I do not think it's a coincidence that they've fallen off since then.
Right. And, Joby, when you look at the Pac-12 as a whole here, I'm not certain that you necessarily have any Final Four contenders in here, but way better than we've seen in recent years. Look at the overall records, only Cal with a losing record, and only Cal and Washington State outside the top 100 of the net. So when you look at teams like even UCLA getting better.
Yeah, UCLA is Lazarus right now. I mean that, you know, that 99 was probably 199 a month ago. they were so bad. But yes, it's a much better conference. I think you're looking realistically at five bids here. If you look at six teams seriously under discussion, I think five would get it. I do think there is a Final Four team here. They won't be as highly seeded to be the Final Four, but I do think, forget what happened in the Civil War, I think Oregon still got the tools. I really do.
And they do.
Moves it from me. I
don't know if they always play up to it.
David, here's the upcoming schedule, and if Oregon is going to be there this week with Colorado at home on Thursday, that's the chance for them to prove it.
Well, they need to. I mean, if you're a Final Four team, you got to beat Colorado at home. You got to beat Colorado's everybody.
First place team, but
you got to beat everybody at home. They're also not a protected seed.
But I think another team that's going to be facing a now or never week is going to be Stanford. They obviously had a major scare thanks to Oscar De Silva getting a head laceration against Colorado, where obviously both teams are going to be visibly shaken, but the Cardinal now have to face both Arizona State and Arizona within the span of 3 days here.
Titel, real interesting week for your school as well as your rival. Both of them going to Stanford this week, and obviously having to win a Cal.
We picked a good week to play at Stanford because of what Salika said with the injury to De Silva. I was very depressed by the loss to UCLA at home. After having to deal with 2 hours of Bill Walton, the least they can do is get me a win, and they just
oh, come on, we love Bill Walton.
We love Bill Walton.
David, how about the gun? How about the Zags over in the West Coast Conference?
Can I get Pac-12 real quick? I just want to give a quick shout out to Kyle Smith and Wazoo. They are not anywhere close to the NCAA or the NIT, but my God, do they suck way less than they did before he arrived. Anyway,
and a reverse shout out to Washington, but sorry, Rocco, our good friend. But David, the Zags, they went, and this was the big game. They were at St. Mary's. Everyone was hyped. The place was couldn't even squeeze another person in there, and it was a absolute massacre.
Yeah, it was the type of game they said get there early. If you didn't get there early, you had no fun because 90 seconds after the game's over. St. Mary's, I think that we have them on the bubble, but inside of it, regardless of specifically where, I think we have them in the same general area. So you would expect a team like that that's playing at home to maybe not win the game, but with all that energy and with it being the showcase game, make a good showing of themselves, and they did not. I mean, Gonzaga just – it was a massacre. It was – I turned it off at halftime. There was no point to keep watching.
Honestly, this is a week where St. Mary's probably should have gone 0-2 because they also dug themselves a deep hole at San Diego, but fortunately they were able to at least dig out of that one and avoid what would have been a real damaging, probably quad four loss.
Yeah.
The other team that looks like a tournament team did have a good week. BYU, nice, easy one. It went at Portland, took care of San Francisco at home as well.
Should we be worried? We've got the selection committee guessing expert here. How safe is St. Mary's? I mean, what is their margin for error? It isn't very big. I think that they'll get in there, but they can't stub their toes.
No, I have them as a 9 this week. I think that the fact that they are not going to beat Gonzaga in the season finale on the road, they should win those four. That'll put them at 24-7. The Wisconsin win could be the big factor. It'd be nice if they didn't have the tier three losses. I don't think they're like 100% safe, but if they don't stub their toe, I think they're in. Toby?
I agree. I think Arizona State's going to be a tier one by the time this is by this weekend. If Arizona State beats Stanford, that 54 is like 50 or 49. And I think Arizona State at that point is a solid tournament team. I mean, not solid as in protected seed, but 8-9 rank.
And don't hold your nose at that Utah State home. It's maybe a home win, but it's still a quality Utah
State.
And
Utah State's playing better. It's
a lot better.
Yeah, I'm not saying Utah State's a world beater, but that it's a good win. It's a deserving tier two win,
go ahead, Joby.
And so, yes, St. Mary's has a profile, but here's the problem that teams, and Stalica mentioned it, teams like them and BYU will have a similar situation. And that is, you do stub your toe against San Diego. It is devastating. And so when you're that close, they don't have that much room. I don't think – I have them a little lower than Titel, but and all the goodwill gets wiped out with a bad loss. They go out and they lose. Even the Pacific at home, that's not going to do them any favors. And Pacific's not awful. Pacific's a decent team.
Well, how about Pacific being a decent team, Titel?
You don't want to say good things about Damon Stoudemire? You came to the right place. This team was 3-4 in conference play after a 33-point loss to the Zags a couple weeks ago. They've won 4 in a row and are 19-8 overall. Even if they lose at St. Mary's this Saturday, which they will, they have a good shot to finish with 23 regular season wins for the first time in 15 years. Stoudemire, he didn't win more than 14 games in any of his first 3 seasons. He's made the leap this year thanks to 2 things. One is a horrible non-conference schedule. That's the truth. The second is the quadrupler over St. Mary's last month after the tripler loss to Boise State in November. And Jaleel Tripp is the best 6'5 forward you don't know about. Last 13 games, 18 points, 10 boards a game. He's 6'5".
We've got the upcoming schedule there. In addition to that Pacific St. Mary's game, BYU, a pair of road games, albeit at Loyola Marymount and San Diego. And David Gonzaga's at Pepperdine.
Yeah, the palsies are together again.
Lorenzo Romar and Mark Few on the court. Let's jump over to one of our favorite conferences this season. Yes. It is the Mountain West Conference and the home of the Thomas & Mack Center's ConExpo ConAGG 2020. That is March 10th through 14th at the Thomas & Mack Center. Register now, ConExpoConAGG.com. Look at this event. Look at those tractors. Look at those bulldozers, those cranes. This is going to be an awesome event. I'm so excited.
One month away now. This is
March Madness.
Yeah, it is. And like I keep saying, we need to register on the show. We'll save that for later, but we'll log on to that website and register.
San Diego State actually got a little bit of a battle from Air Force this week. Not much, but it was, it was a road game. Let's update David. What about Utah State? A couple more wins ever since that game that they completely blew to Boise. They've been looking real good.
Yeah, you're right. After the Boise game, I kind of was just like, well, that's it for them, and I kind of quit paying attention to them. But, I've started watching a little more and a little more. And if you pull them up here, the paper is slowly starting to look a little bit better to where maybe they are around the bubble or inside of it. I mean, they have neutral floor wins against LSU, who's probably a first ballot team, in Florida, who's on the bubble. And quite frankly, if you pull Florida up, they don't really look a whole lot better. That loss at San Diego State, they were competitive in that game. They actually played well. So while they have had some atrocious outings, particularly the loss at Air Force, where it was just dumbfounding how bad that one was. And then, not winning at Boise State, but, the Air Force loss really had me holding my nose. There's enough there to where maybe they're in the discussion. I don't know. I'm slowly.
Let's ask our selection committee expert this one also, Tytel. Let's assume they win these last five regular season games here. Let's assume they make it to the Mountain West Championship game and lose there to San Diego State. I think both those are fairly reasonable assumptions. Can this Aggies team squeeze in to Dayton as a first four?
You're telling me, what will the final record be? Like
23-25-8? Yeah.
Joby, I think they're just going to be just on the wrong side of the bubble.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think that you got to see what happens everywhere else. That's always what happens. They will be under consideration without a doubt. They will have a four as their last name, either for first four out or first or last four in.
Tytel, what about the team that they had that very strange loss at Boise State? I think you want to discuss that very briefly.
What about that one?
Well, the Boise State game,
you
when
don't
they choked.
They were hung over because Mormons were hung over from New Year's Eve, I guess.
Yeah.
Boise had won five in a row before the 9-point loss at Utah State on Saturday. They're 3-0 in overtime games this year, including wins over BYU and Utah State, which are great for the resume. Coach Leon Rice has only had two guys start even 14 games this year. Ton of juggling involved. Great work by him to keep them competitive. Junior power forward Derek Alston, 6 of 8 threes in the win over San Jose State to finish January. Since then, 2 of 16 in February. Stop shooting threes. Even if they lose to the Aztecs this Sunday, which they will, they have a decent shot of finishing the regular season 20-10. And then they can't beat the Aztecs, but if somebody else can upset them, I see a path, but probably not.
Stalika, there's the upcoming schedule in this conference. The key games, obviously, San Diego State at home against New Mexico, at Boise State. Two road games left, at Boise and at Nevada. Could they fall this Sunday? Ty tells us no.
I would probably say not, but by the same token, I would also be looking at a Utah State who's actually going to be at a second-place Colorado State tomorrow night and then going to Fresno on Saturday, which should be winnable, but the Aggies are not in a position where they can be overlooking games anymore.
No, they've got to win them all, as we just mentioned, and that, like we said, may not be enough. But last conference, let's do this quickly. We're kind of running out of time here, but the American, we did not discuss it, where Houston is looking, Tytel, absolutely amazing, in my opinion, right now.
They are. They had the heartbreaking 2-point loss at Cincinnati, and then they had a pair of double-digit losses, wins, including the 33-point destruction of the Shockers on Sunday. You have to remember, Kelvin Sampson was out of coaching as of 2014, I thought for good. He's got a decent shot of winning 27 or more games for the third straight season. And the best thing that happened to John Giroux was biting a guy and getting suspended. He came back with 12 points in 19 minutes against Wichita State. They won 7 of 8 with freshman Caleb Mills, instant offense off the bench. He had been a starter last month. They lost to Tulsa. Samson put him on the bench. 13 points off the bench, only 4 turnovers in 8 games.
Yeah, I'm going to get that Houston profile up here on the left side and Joby, the Cincinnati on the right side. You know, just when you started to want to believe after they win at Wichita, they go and they lay a clunker at UConn. I know there was some controversy there, quite frankly. There's twofold controversy there. You know, wasn't a foul on the final play and they should have been in the line shooting. I think it was a foul, but two things. Number one, if you look closely, he absolutely moved his feet. It should have been a travel before the foul. And by the way, the buzzer went off. Sleepy, you pointed this out. And the foul actually came after the buzzer, if you watch it. So I think it was the right call.
Not just the buzzer, but also the light it illuminated around the backboard.
But what about how funny would it have been had they called the foul and Cincinnati wins and Lee Del Vecchio?
Cincinnati – we're talking about St. Mary's is yet another team that will have 4 in their name, I think, at the end of the day. Because the American is a lot weaker than we are stating it. We cast off the American as like the 7th Power 5, Power 6 conference, as the also-ran. But with Memphis's fall, I'm sure someone will discuss that. This conference is not very deep. Houston's playing great. We've stated it, well stated. Wichita State's falling off a cliff right now, and Cincinnati is not going to have the opportunities. That Memphis win at home is not that great anymore. The Wichita State win at home might turn out not to be great anymore. They don't have – Temple is not as good as you thought they would be a few weeks ago. The opportunities for Cincinnati are actually – going away, and they are in a position because I think they're slightly out right now, maybe 1 or 2 spots out or only 1 or 2 in. They're going to need to get wins. They're going to need to do something above the norm to get that bid. Boy, a lot's going to be riding on March 1st if that is the case.
Well, yeah. I think if they win everything but the Houston game, it might be enough just on the volume of wins. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're right. If they slip up any of those other games, that you're right. I think they got to win that Houston game.
And you can't overlook the wrecking ball that's South Florida either because they already did pretty heavy damage to Memphis over the weekend.
Memphis is already wrecked.
Let me put Memphis and Wichita State both on the screen here, David. Let's talk about these two teams quickly, but especially Memphis. Wichita State, a team 3 losses in a row, and suddenly a team that looked like, you know, the best team in the American is 5-5 in this fairly weak conference.
Well, first of all, thank you for putting Memphis on the screen to verify that Memphis never really belongs on the screen.
I'll put Tulane on the screen instead. Go ahead.
Yeah, put Tulane on the screen instead. At least like there. Memphis, it's just sort of like, you don't really notice a substantial difference, do you? They're kind of similar.
Like, Wichita.
But Memphis, there's just nothing there.
Wichita has
at least done a few things, you know, albeit not a whole
Oklahoma,
lot.
Oklahoma,
and they've avoided awful losses, whereas, you know, we had Cincinnati up there earlier. It's a shame because I do think Cincinnati's playing like a tournament-caliber team, but are they going to run out of season before they get caught back up and inside the bubble? Wichita, their losses aren't – they don't smell quite as bad, but their wins, Okie State.
And Wichita just doesn't – unlike Cincinnati, who has a game at Houston, Wichita doesn't have Houston again. They're 0-2 against them,
right.
unless it's in the American Championship game, in which case they're going to the tournament. So
Judging on how their last loss is
looking like a Frank Haith loss.
Yeah, and judging how their last game against Houston met – I don't know if that really matters. I mean, if they had another one against Houston, but kind of disappointing for a team that really looked like it was playing well offensively. What is their offensive? There it is. The adjusted offensive efficiency for Wichita.
Wichita State's offensive efficiency is 133. Defensively, they're 17th.
Yeah, 133. I'm surprised it's even that good. Honestly, wow.
The upcoming schedules on the street here, Stalika, I mean, I know David doesn't want to discuss Memphis, but Memphis at Cincinnati might be the best game on the schedule there this week.
Memphis going to Cincinnati, and then UConn also hosting Memphis for the last time before they just burn all the bridges and head off to the Big East.
Of course, we already mentioned that big five game Sunday, Villanova, Temple. Yeah. But let me pull this down here. Let's run to some final thoughts. And Sleeka, while I got you on the screen, let me stick with you first.
I'll probably go ahead and go back to Arizona State, where if you look at their trajectory, they'll probably be on pace for what would be their third first four bid. So what used to be the Leon Rice / Boise State wing at the Dayton Marriott, go ahead and name it after Arizona State. But after what UCLA did this weekend, I'm reminded of another great line from Bobby Hurley a couple years ago. If you're going to get a road win in this state, you got to go to effing Tucson. And sure enough, look what the Bruins did.
I was going to buzz you if there was not a curse word in that quote somewhere as soon as you started quoting Bobby Hurley. Tytel.
I just want to give a shout out as the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame announced seven new inductees for their class of 2020. The three that you might have heard of, Debbie Brock, a 4'11 point guard who was a three-time national champ at Delta State in the 70s. Swin Cash, who went 39-0 at UConn, then won three WNBA titles. And Tamika Catchings, all she did, four-time Olympic gold medalist, five-time WNBA Defensive Player of the Year, and led the league in steals eight times. Congrats to all the women.
Oh, congrats, yes. Joby.
Chad, can you pull up the ACC standings?
Sure. They're coming up here in a second. But
right now, as we discussed, the ACC has three teams in, and Syracuse, Virginia on the bubble perhaps, et cetera. Here's a key factor.
That's the American. Oh, there.
As we go, look at that net. Look at how many teams, four, are within 14, and the 14th is a North Carolina team with Cole Anthony back and could get some wins. Four teams within range of the magic 75 number. All of a sudden, as teams get to 75, I think a couple of them will, not all four, but I think a couple of them will get to the 75 mark. All of a sudden, their road wins look a lot better. Their home wins are tier two, not tier three. That will have a dramatic impact and could help Virginia, Syracuse. Let's see if NC State goes on a little run. Notre Dame, we talked about, is getting hot.
So you mean the wins over those teams? So Virginia and Syracuse's wins over teams like Georgia Tech and North Carolina.
Right, over Georgia Tech. A road win. You know, Virginia already owns a road win at Georgia Tech. If Georgia Tech gets a 75, that's a tier one win. And all of a sudden, boom, we all know that Georgia Tech's no world beater, but metrically, it will look a lot better when I think a lot of these teams, the number one thing they're missing in a lot of cases are high-end quality wins. And I think they might get some, but watching those net numbers is going to be a very, very big deal as we come down the stretch.
And watching Boston College's net fall. But David, yeah. Let's just finish out the show.
Two final thoughts. One will take about 30 seconds. I normally don't look at other websites and their bracketology. I kind of just focus on what we're doing and then rely it to our own guessing experts. But I did find it amusing today in shopping around to see what everybody else was doing that they feel it necessary to list who the last four teams in are. As if, like, you couldn't just look at the first four and decipher that for yourself. I don't know why that struck me as funny. The other thing, getting back to Dayton, I actually am kind of excited for them that they're having the season that they're having. It's not a place that is probably in the college basketball mainstream so much because, you know, it's not really a blue blood. It's not from a major conference, but they average over 12,000 fans a game. And this is a team that's in the NIT more than the NCAA. You can't, how many programs get that kind of attendance without any real rich history or storied success? So it's kind of neat to see that fan base and that school get to finally have a year like this. Anyway, that's my final thought.
All right. Well, good job. I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. On behalf of David Griggs, Joby Fortson, John Tytel, John Sleeka, I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll be back again with lots more content as the week goes on. And we'll talk to you again real soon.